WebmasterRadio.fm has compressed thousands of podcasts and all of our radio shows into the ultimate internet marketer's knowledge base. Introducing the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app, absolutely free and now available for iPhone and Android users. Listen to our live broadcast at the push of a button or access our complete archive of shows, past and present, like SEO 101, Affiliate Buzz, The Shoe Money Show, The Daily Searchcast, and so much more. Download it from the iTunes App Store or the Google Play Store today.
Taking you inside the search engine results and beyond the page rank. Hold on to your white hat or black hat. WebmasterRadio.fm is ready to take you behind the backlinks. We're digging and scraping past the surface of everyday news and views of search engine marketing and dropping our proverbial anchor text on the important issues affecting the industry with our panel of search engine insiders. Now, let's go behind the backlinks. Here are your hosts.
Hi, I'm John Ball.
And I'm Zach Ball.
Welcome to the Backlink Show.
Today we interview a stud, an SEO stud. He's a content strategy and keyword expert, Mr. Nick Eubanks.
Yes, we're going to take a look into the mind of pines and answer some frequently asked questions.
But first, I would like us to argue about the virtues of guest hosting.
Yes.
Today we're going to talk about the virtues of guest posting. Is it good? Is it bad? Should we do it? Should we not do it? John, what is your take with guest posting?
I think it's good.
Why?
Look, a link should have some effort, some work behind it. There should be some thought process if it's valuable. Google says that they want real natural links to cover the web. And guest posting, if done correctly, with a real site and a real article, a real original article written for the benefit of mankind, is good. It's good for the web.
Thank you for that. The sterling reputation you just gave some great guest post. But, I mean, of course anything worth value, anything that is giving somebody something that they that has value to it, of course it's good. But I'm talking about guest posting in the SEO world. It's turned into cheap licorice. People are just assuming that it's great and it's easy to do, but it's turning what you're saying is this great thing into this terrible thing. So guest posting is, for all intents and purposes, a bad thing, because what you're talking about is not guest posting. What you're talking about is content marketing. Guest posting now is bad because people have made it bad.
How have they made it bad?
Because they've overused it. They've overused it, kind of like article marketing. They're basically turning these low-quality guest post sites into these new article marketing sites.
But aren't those sites... What was bad about article marketing? It was bad because it was a low-quality site with no authority and no readership, just getting spammed, essentially, by low-quality content, right? And you're saying, so that is the new guest posting?
I'm saying that there are sites out there that are turning guest posting into this kind of new-age article marketing. And so guest posting, you just got to avoid guest posting at all costs.
Oh, come on. That's crazy.
Is it crazy?
Yes, it is. Article marketing was pure spam. It was sites that were just basically prostitutes accepting whatever came in the door. Guest posting is curated. Guest posting is, I've got a piece of content that's original to you, first of all, and I want to put it on your site because it has value to your readers.
Guest posting that you're talking about is a curated process by a real blog owner on a real blog.
That is what it is. What you're describing is modified article marketing, which is way different from guest posting.
So guest posting is not turning into modified article marketing.
There are some people who treat guest posting in that manner. And in that respect, yes, guest posting is taking a black eye.
So you're saying the guest posting has elements, which I believe is why you need to stay away from what looks like guest posting. If you're doing what looks like guest posting, then you're already associating yourself with people or sites or strategies are recreating the article marketing will. A great guest post that I can stand behind, what might that look like?
Well, I think it's something that is written for the intent of a reader to enjoy it. It's also on a site that gets some traffic that is about something. I mean, article marketing sites were about everything from how to flush your toilet to the color of your website. Guest posting is about, let's say it's about, it's a pet blog. It's about how to take care of your dog in the wintertime. And it's written by someone who actually researched the topic and gave some value. So let's just say, okay, you're saying that guest posting is bad because it is the new article marketing. That's your contention.
It's creating its own terrible momentum.
So you're just saying that basically we can't we cannot stop the tide of this spam, which is going to keep coming at us. It's just rebranded spam.
Yes.
Okay, then how is Google going to sort that out?
Article marketing, they could source the article marketing sites, correct?
Yes.
Although there may have been a million of them, you could spot them out.
I think the elements that the algorithm could detect, yes.
So then what in guest posting can the algorithm detect? You know, one of the things is obviously like footer links, like links in the bio. I
mean, yeah.
You can see that.
Yeah.
But links in the content, links that maybe aren't identifiable as guest posts, I'm not sure how Google can sniff it out, but I'm wary of guest posting strategies as a singular strategy for your link building.
Well, I agree with that. I think as a singular strategy, it can be a little dangerous, depending on how you do it. I think Google could find these sites that are basically guest post spam sites, like the article marketing sites. They could certainly find those and say, these are not of value.
But you say guest posts
but here's the problem.
You say guest posts are good because.
Because guest posts are good.
How?
Well, they're good because it gets content out in front of the people that you want to get content in front of.
In a very simple sense, in the sense that most people identify is bad. You can't just go out and do low-quality content on easy-to-publish sites. That is not guest posting in the real link-building sense.
So then, I guess, as an SEO, how are you going to know that? You just have to know, right?
Yeah.
You have to know when you cross the line.
Yes.
And it's a touchy-feely thing.
It is.
Because most of the time, you're going to get two links in the bio, maybe one in the body.
Yeah, because it's the legitimate way to get a link, too.
Now, let me ask you this. This is you know, okay, guest posting, whether or not we identify it as a strategy or not, has been going on since blogs were invented. And you got a bio link. Now, Google's in trouble here, because if they start to devalue all those links, they're going to lose a ton of their link intelligence. And a ton of their link equity is tied up in those links. They're in a tough position. They could identify article marketing sites and say, oh, this one's clearly an article marketing site, everything's devalued, whatever.
Yeah.
But guest posting is interwoven into the fabric that is the blogosphere.
Which is a huge part of the web.
It's a huge part of the web. This is a real tough issue for Google to sort out as SEOs, though. Right? We know there's spam, we know there's SEO link building, we know there's content marketing. I think they're three different things. They may have a continuous line, but they really are three different things.
We'll return behind the backlinks. But first, a word from our sponsors.
I'm John Ball, and I'm one of the founders of Page One Power. Page One Power is a custom link building firm based in Boise, Idaho. We increase search rankings and web traffic for world-class brands and mom-and-pop shops all around the globe. Our link-building strategies work because we focus on relevancy and quality, and we don't outsource anything. Our in-house staff of professional writers and researchers is the best in the industry. We're the link builders you've been looking for. Visit us today at pageonepower.com.
Guys, are you suffering from FD, fulfillment dysfunction? Let MoldingBox.com's online portal system for inventory, tracking, and returns perform for you. We have the enormous tools you need for complete warehousing, shipping, and handling of all your packages, no matter the size or shape, directly to your customers. MoldingBox.com can also fulfill all your nourishing, nutraceutical, and smooth skincare product desires, including green coffee and Garcinia, on demand. Plus, let our in-house printing and CD-DVD manufacturing help you enlarge and maximize your coaching and business opportunity potential. We do everything. Fulfillment, shipping, tracking, inside and out, and all in one place. MoldingBox.com. It's shipping made sexy. Come visit us at AdTech New York, booth number 738.
If you're constantly struggling to find more customers, revenue, or hours in the day, Infusionsoft can help you have the business you've always wanted. For over 10 years, Infusionsoft has been helping business owners, just like you, find the financial freedom and peace of mind you've been searching for.
I'm Scott Martineau, co-founder of Infusionsoft. If you're struggling to find more customers, more revenue, or more hours in the day, Infusionsoft is the proven solution you're looking for. Infusionsoft, the only all-in-one sales and marketing software created specifically for small businesses.
Learn more at www.infusionsoft.com/radio. It's time to get fired up. Fired Up is a show that delivers both business impact and social importance. Our host, Gordon Rudell, will share ideas on how to create higher returns on your communication investments by engaging the people who matter most. Fired Up with Gordon Rudell, on demand anytime, inside the Culture and Business Channel, only on webmasterradio.fm.
Load up your spam filter, because it's time to go behind the backlinks, only on webmasterradio.fm. Here again are your hosts.
I'm Nick Eubank. I'm the Vice President of Digital Strategy for a digital asset holdings company called W.L. Smith & Associates. We build, manage, and support a proprietary e-commerce platform, and we own and manage a number of our own e-commerce properties.
Nice. Cool. Sounds like you're a pretty busy guy.
I like to keep busy, make the time go by faster, and get through the work into the vacations quicker.
Why did you get into SEO, Nick? What was the aha moment for you that you said, I'm doing this?
I was helping people with email campaigns, like back in 2004, 2005, and sort of realized that, like, when I would put a whole bunch of words on a page and build a bunch of crappy links, we'll call them, that I would sort of get all of this traffic, whether it was qualified or not. It tended to make things work a lot better than they did without the traffic. So I just sort of, around 2007, just realized this is something I should probably be paying more attention to.
What do you like most about SEO? What turns you on about this industry and what you do?
I love the misinformation. I love how much misinformation there is and how many people out there live, sleep, eat, and die by how much just crappy information there is. It makes it a lot of fun.
It makes it fun in what way? That's interesting.
The propagation of just terrible information makes it really easy to dominate some markets and makes it really easy to squeeze out or quickly identify just terrible agencies that really don't have any idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
It sounds probably a little arrogant, but honestly, it becomes sort of an entertainment. What's more enjoyable than anything is at this point in my life, because I own and operate a number of consumer product e-commerce sites where we are the manufacturer and the distributor, I get pitched all the time from SEO companies. And I've sort of turned it into sort of a weekly entertainment, you know, challenging these people on their approach and getting them to send over their materials and just ripping apart their pitch.
Wow.
Kind of diabolical, and I suppose it is, but it's really fun. I've thought about turning it into a Tumblr. Because some of them are just hysterical. Some of the
bad SEO pitches on the Tumblr account. Sounds like a
just like why SEO is a joke.com or something terrible like that.
Yeah,
viewed as a joke. I'd have to find the right way to phrase it. Obviously,
that's a problem with our industry. There's no certifying body. You don't go to college and get a degree, and everyone accepts best practices and shake hands and get certified and licenses. And it's the Wild West, man.
The Wild West is the perfect description. One of the first things I looked for in intern candidates back when I was building Factor Media in 2008 was I wanted people that had torched sites. If you haven't deleted a database or completely torched the site or gotten, you know, kicked out of affiliate programs, that means you're not pushing the envelope and we probably shouldn't work together.
Wow, that's cool.
That's sweet, man.
So with the amount of bad information out there, you went ahead and wrote an ebook. The keyword research ebook. Why did you do that? Probably because you wanted to fill a void, but how do you feel that went off and how do you feel about that project that you did?
It's a funny one. I really don't deserve a lot of the credit there.
So you didn't write it. You're just slapping your brand on it. Is that what you're doing?
No, it's all my writing. So I wrote every word in there, but I didn't put it all together into a book.
The
publishing platform, which I think is sick, Celio, and I'm not an investor or anything. There's no hidden agenda here, but they approached me. They're like, hey, we're building this thing. Come take a look at it. You know, if you're down, we'd like to put our content team together, pull in a collection of the stuff that you've already written and reformat into sort of a storyline. And then maybe if you could help us write the segues in between the sections, we think we could make this into a book. So they did. They went and they took, I sent them, you know, probably 40 links to posts I've written. And they came back 3 weeks later and they were like, you know, here it is. After one or two rounds of revisions, it ended up in almost current format. I've added a bunch to it since, but I was really happy with what they put together.
So is this book, I mean, who is this book designed for? Is it for the newbie? Is it for someone who knows something about it? I mean, is this book actually, does it have actionable data that can help somebody?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I think the reviews, so I've got, I think, 26 or 27 reviews on the site now that I think are pretty accurate representation of it. there's people in there who are like, you know what, I just started learning about SEO, and I know this keyword thing is important, but I don't know why or I don't know how to approach it. And then I've got people in there who've been doing it for 5 or 10 years, and all they really wanted was to see somebody take this and build a financial model around it and then use some real examples.
What do you think about Google's deal with
the encrypted
searching? What's your take on that?
It's a pain in the ass, but at the same time, like, it's not. It's just, all it means is that they're going to make a little bit more money and we're going to make a little bit less money as SEOs. So, I mean, my short-term solution, and this is by no means sustainable or any type of long-term strategy, is, you know, sites that are revenue sources for me and for the company, we're going to have to spend a little money to get more granular keyword data. We're going to have to create AdWords campaigns where we haven't before to try to get the referring data that we're used to having. Outside of that, I think one of the takes that people have been sort of buzzing about for the past 48 hours is, you're just going to have to look at organic as a separate channel now, and as a channel as a whole. Just because you can't get down to the granular data to see what the referring keywords were, you still are going to have your conversion data. You're still going to have your CPA data. Like, it sucks, but it's not as big of a deal, I think, as some people are making it out.
Well, anytime someone's got to pay for something which was free, I think it's going to make people mad.
At the same time, there's this whole feel, like, there's this undue sense of entitlement. Like, we've been using analytics for so long for free that it's become an expectation. And while I like it, and I've realized Google's got billions of dollars in profit and one of the highest profit per employee counts in the world, they should be putting out free tools to make the world a better place. That's all well and good, but they're a business at the end of the day. They have stockholders and stakeholders, and if they're going to spend, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to develop and maintain a system, if they decide they want to charge for it or they want to take something away for free, none of us can really bitch and complain about that when it really comes down to it.
And, you know, I speak a lot at different trade shows, and one of the things I always say is Google has done a great job with helping SEOs keep their jobs. I mean, Google runs a tight ship. They really do. Panda, Penguin, all that, it kind of tortured us, but it made us become better SEOs to do a better job. And they are a good benefactor to us as SEOs. They are the reason we exist. So you're right. That's a good point of view.
No, I would completely agree with that. And I would also say that shitty SEOs help keep SEOs in business as well.
Yeah, which is the theme of your new Tumblr site, right?
I might just have to pull the trigger on that one.
Yeah.
Speaking of SEO, you say that SEO is a kind of a mathematical input situation. What's your stand on that as far as, because at Page One Power, when we look at SEO, we see it very simple. SEO is on-page content, it's link building, and those two things done well and done together can result in great organic rankings. So I guess we don't really espouse the mathematical standpoint. Do you, and what is your, how do you espouse that?
I completely agree with you know, it's obviously a mix of on-page and off-page. Some of it obviously is also going to come down to things like user experience and build of the site. There's also, you know, there's some more tech implications, I feel like, that often get overlooked in the SEO world. People who came into SEO with a development background tend to have a better grasp on the technical underpinnings of what makes a website functional, crawlable, scalable. At the same time, all the actions you're talking about, so creating content, creating new pages or supporting a scalable architecture, building links, placing content offsite, running, you know, press campaigns for sponsorship or donations or giveaways, all of that has completely quantifiable costs, and within an order of magnitude can be quantified in terms of projected results. Anytime you can build a financial model, you should be able to get within, again, I like using the phrase within an order of magnitude. So, you know, within 100 to 150% plus or minus of what the expected results are going to be.
You're really looking at it as, you know, what you do, which is you're running e-commerce sites, and you're really looking at it as a return on the effort you're putting into your SEO. Is that kind of what I'm getting?
I designed the model originally in 2011 for a content site. So Factor Media, one of my companies, we built and still to this day manage the largest consumer review website in Japan. It's called Soshibako.jp. The model was originally built to help us figure out where we needed to put our nuts. So, like, it was, we've got this content team, we've got these outreach people and these social media people. We know what we're paying them an hour. We know what the average results are that they can accomplish are within this time span. Where do we need to be investing in content that's going to give us the largest return? And using an ad model, we're able to figure out, okay, so we know that we need to crack open page views. And if we're going to have an average earnings of $5 per 1,000 impressions, we can literally equate how much traffic can we get based on our average rate of page views for that traffic. How much money is this going to make us? You know, if this is the projected ROI from these keywords, what's it going to cost us to get the rankings that we need, and then equate that to the click-through to get the page views. I mean, you could, the whole thing's a mathematical process.
And within that formula, within that model, how much of that have you found to be just like uncontrollable mess?
20 to 30% easily.
And that's the algorithm and the changes and all the garbage and competitors and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's trying to nail down as many of the variable ranking factors as we possibly can. And you know, Google does almost never gives good information when they're talking about themselves. But I do think there's a degree of accuracy that there's, you know, between 200 and 300 ranking signals. Some of the things that we've seen, and this is probably some of the best information you'll get out of me, is different ranking signals for different types of SERPs.
Yeah.
So for different types of brand SERPs or different types of named SERPs, so that brand could be a person's name, we've seen trends where a specific type of SERP will have a specific type of signaling power. So certain SERPs will include reviews. Even if those reviews are not, they don't have as high of a page authority or domain authority as the sites that they're outranking, they'll be included in there because Google realizes that this is a set of information that this searcher is probably looking for. And if those search results are getting clicks and they're seeing qualitative signals from those results, Google's going to keep them in the search. That's why sites like Rip Off Report and Piss Consumer continue to exist and continue to show up.
Yeah, right. And the interesting thing about that is that Google is way more complex in that respect than I think most SEOs give them credit for. It's a fun industry, right? I mean, it's something we can all look at, and it's kind of a sport. It's not like dentistry where it's pretty well established and laid out, and you can charge so much for a filling. And SEO is crazy fun, man. I mean, let me ask you something. Let's pretend that the audience listening to this radio show are SEOs who are either good or great, so they know what they're doing. You, as someone who's done this long enough and has been successful, if you give them one tip that, you know, you're not giving the farm away, but like they can lean back in their chair and think, that's cool, what would it be?
Don't cannibalize your rankings by targeting close variations of keywords across different pages. It's probably the most common mistake that I see with people trying to rank sites. They're like, well, we've got blue widgets and green widgets and blue and green polka dotted widgets. Let's create a page for each.
That's interesting. Talk a little more about that.
So in my experience, your best bet for spreading your keywords out is to do so all on one page. Find out what the head term is or the variable body term for the page. Make that the focus of the page title, and then get your variations on the page in the form of on-page content, text, presentations, videos, everything that can be encoded and crawled by search engine. More often than not, I see people really, especially e-commerce sites, are super, they do this a lot. People will cannibalize their own rankings. They'll go for key terms that are so closely semantically related that Google can't distinguish between the two of them, and it's no different from having two pages of identical content. Google doesn't know which one to assign the quality score for, so instead of ranking one of them at 3 and one of them at 8 in the same page, it'll rank both of them at 8 and 9.
Man, home run. Well done. Hey, Nick, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. We look forward to seeing what you come up with. You're a young guy full of vivacious energy. You know, if you ever see us at a trade show or anywhere, we'd love just to give you a high five and say thanks a lot for this. But thank you very much for talking with us.
Absolutely my pleasure, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
We'll return behind the backlinks. But first, a word from our sponsors.
And a pitch. There are many things we would love to catch. Catching the final out of a baseball game.
And that's the ball game.
Reeling that big catch of the day. Or catching a ride home.
Taxi!
How about catching more attention like the biggest retail brands on earth? Introducing Catchy.com, where they sell short branded attractive.com domain names. Use a short and catchy brand, just like Sony, Visa, and Nike for your next business venture. You can even rent to own for as low as $100 a month. Catch a big break for your business with Catchy.com.
Ever wondered how you could have access to your own SEO expert, paid search specialist, or social media wizard? Looking for help with your affiliate, display media, or email marketing?
Look no further than the folks at Fang Digital Marketing.
Fang Digital specializes in both paid and organic search, social media, display, and mobile advertising solutions, and is staffed by industry veterans from Google, Yahoo,
and one of the industry's most influential PPC experts.
Fang Digital's award-winning staff stays on top of the latest in digital trends and offer tailored solutions so they can audit your progress and build a roadmap to your success. Learn more about their expanding range of full-service strategic marketing solutions at fangdigital.com. That's FANGdigital.com.
Building better search engine rankings takes the right formula. Tracking those rankings is super simple. All you need is AuthorityLabs.com. Authority Labs uses automated daily rank tracking tools to monitor your site's performance or leverage their API to build your own tools. No matter what animal-labeled algorithms affect your ranking, you should be using Authority Labs. Unlimited users for no additional cost and white labeling can help keep your clients updated and save countless hours of creating reports. Whether you're running sites with just a few or millions of keywords, what you need is AuthorityLabs.com.
Ready to learn to be a mass marketing mastermind? Get schooled on how to be inboxed.
You've got mail.
Our host will show you how to deliver on email marketing strategies without going postal. Inbox, on demand anytime inside the Internet Marketing Channel, only on webmasterradio.fm.
Load up your spam filter, because it's time to go behind the backlinks, only on webmasterradio.fm. Here again are your hosts.
Today we're going to talk about brain-computer interfaces. Sounds like a thing of the future, but it's definitely not. So if you look back at the beginning of human history, since we picked up our first stick, humans have been inseparable from their technology, and that's no different today. Look at everyone with their smartphones and the Twitter and the Facebook and all this nonsense. Well, it's only going to get cooler. The only problem we have right now is that we have to use our meat to interface with keyboards and mice, and that's slowing the whole thing down. But thanks to Moore's Law, again, technology is to a point where we can directly interface with the human brain and don't require any kind of device to do it. For example, in the early 60s and 70s, the government, through DARPA, the government's Advanced Research and Projects Department, implanted silver wires in the brain matter of monkeys. These monkeys were then able to navigate computer cursors on the screen and command robotic arms to perform simple tasks simply by thinking about it. And that was in 1969. Then in 1999, University of California, Berkeley, they were able to decode the neural firings to reproduce images seen by cats. Think about that for a second. In 1999, the technology is good enough they could target 177 specific brain cells in the thalamus and decode what that cat was seeing in real time. So they were able to see through the cat's eyes. That was in 1999. In 2000, the same group built a brain-computer interface that reproduced owl monkey movements while the monkey operated a joystick or reached for food. It operated in real time and could also control a separate robot remotely over the internet. So the robot monkey did whatever the real monkey did over the internet in real time. In 2004, Washington University in St. Louis, researchers enabled a teenage boy to play Space Invaders using his BCI. The control is rapid, requires minimal training, and is an ideal trade-off with regards to signal fidelity and level of invasiveness due to other invasive methods of implanting electrodes directly into the brain. The new tech, it just goes right on your scalp. And that leads us to August 27th, 2013. University of Washington researchers have performed what they believe is the first non-invasive human-to-human brain interface, with one researcher able to send a brain signal via the internet to control the hand motions of a fellow researcher. Think about how that plays out. So you're hiking with your buddies and you fall and break your legs. No one knows how to help you. So you put your smartphone up next to your temple and now the doctor is using your hands over the internet. And it doesn't stop there either. With the magnetic resonance imagers being as small as they are, they're building a language of the blood flow of your brain. So they can point this imager at your mind, and they can tell what you're thinking in your head, what words you're using. And the tech is so good now that they can point this flashlight at you, and the computer will start to say what you're thinking based on the blood flow of that brain activity.
We are in this link-building SEO world up to our heads, right? And we walk down the street, we think everybody knows what SEO is. They know link-building terms. And sometimes you got to stick your head out of the sand, you got to ask somebody, and you'd be surprised. Nobody knows nothing about nothing when it comes to SEO link-building.
Even a lot of people in internet marketing.
It's amazing. John does 12, 15 webinars a year. He speaks a dozen times, and he get some of the same questions over and over and over, because guess what? You just learned about link building yesterday, and you don't know what anchor text is. Oh my gosh, happens all the time. So we have a few questions from some folks who have visited our webinars and have seen John speak. And so let's go right into the first question. John.
Yes.
What percentage of anchor text should I be going for in a post-Penguin world?
That's a great question all the time. Okay, here's the deal. Obviously, pre-Penguin, pre-Panda for that matter, you wanted the same anchor text over and over. It was just like catnip, you know?
Yes, the opiate.
Catnip over and over and over. And over. the opiate of the SEO. And okay, that's over. We're going to agree that. These days, it's funny because we swung from that to branded, which is basically the same concept because you get the same anchor text over and over again.
So what's a branded anchor text?
Oh, it's www.pageonpower.com.
So instead of getting link building services, you're getting
pageonpower.com.
Okay.
Over and over and over. And that's not natural either. Really,
true.
What I say to people is write a list of like 14, 15 anchor texts and just go through that list. And just, you know, just use different anchor text all the time. What's the percentage? I don't know. I think when I heard Matt Cutts speak at SMX Advanced, he said they have sets of keywords that they, you know, they have different metrics on. So the payday loans keyword, that search engine results page, is going to have a different, you know, a different blend of anchor text they're looking for that they're going to attack. So just be normal. Just use all kinds.
Have a variety.
Use as big a variety as you can. Now, I'm not going to, so far, I've said in the past, never use the same twice. That's ridiculous. Because I think anchor text still has a lot of value if you use it correctly.
All right, now the second question. Does authorship matter with link building? So let's clarify. Authorship is Google Plus.
Yes.
We're talking about Google Plus authorship.
Yes.
Okay.
Authorship matters because you get more authority through that. If Google identifies you as a writer that is verified, it can put more weight on the links that you are getting. That's the simple way it is. They are using that strategy to figure out what's real and what's not on the web.
To kind of sort out the who is and the who are not.
Yeah, right? The sheep and the goats. Is this guy has been published. We verify him. We know it's real. We know it's authentic.
Plus, now they're using G+, which Google loves people using G+.
Oh, yeah, of course.
If they didn't have authorship, who would use G+?
Well, besides SEOs?
Nobody. We got time for one more question. What are the best ways to write an email to get a link?
Okay, that's great. If you see a beautiful girl at a party, you know, and you're like, I want to talk to her, how are you going to do that?
I don't know.
You're gonna go to Google and find out what...
What should I say to a girl?
Yeah, what should I say to this girl at a girl party? I mean, if you do that, you're an idiot, first of all. You have no business. What you do is you talk to them as a human would.
And how would a human talk?
A human would say, hey, my name is John. I noticed you over here, and I just want to have a conversation with you. You don't have to give a form letter or give a line. My son is in seventh grade. He's a good-looking kid. I said, Jack, his name is Jack, if you want to get any girl in the seventh grade to fall in love with you, you just have to do one thing. Walk up to a seventh grade girl and say, my name is Jack. I'd like to have a conversation with you. And they'll fall in love with you. People long for connection and connectedness. That's what you do.
So you're a link builder.
Yes.
You have a webmaster. You're
yes.
saying, email that webmaster as if you were emailing a friend or a colleague.
Yes.
Just be very normal and natural about
yes.
it.
Yes. Don't say, my name is, you know, so-and-so. I saw your website and liked its content for its usability. No, don't do that.
I mean, how many emails do we get that are just I can't even read them because they're just so weird.
I see it coming before I open the email. And by the way, the subject line of an email is like the headline on an article. They will read your email or they will not read your email based on that subject. So don't put request for link. That's stupid. Put something like, you want to read this, I promise. Or, I just want a minute, that's all. Just something to get them to open it.
Yeah.
Because it's a human on the other side of the fence.
As you always say, you're getting links through robots and the links are no good at all.
You're getting the wrong links.
Link building is a human effort.
It's all about you.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.